The 2027 memory sold out story sounds like it could be hyperbole until you look at the sourcing. Multiple memory manufacturers have confirmed that their 2027 high bandwidth memory capacity is fully committed, meaning hyperscalers and AI hardware companies have already contracted for all of next year's production. The term circulating in the industry is Ramageddon, which is simultaneously funny and an accurate description of what happens to anyone trying to build new AI infrastructure without a multi-year supply agreement already in place.
The underlying dynamic is worth explaining because it compounds in ways that aren't obvious. High bandwidth memory, HBM, is the specialized memory used in AI accelerators like H100s and their successors. It's manufactured by essentially three companies, SK Hynix, Samsung, and Micron. And the production process is slow to scale because it involves complex 3D stacking of memory dies. You can't just build more factories quickly. The tooling and process development takes years.
Meanwhile, the demand side accelerated faster than anyone's supply projections from even 18 months ago. Every model capability improvement triggers a new round of training runs that require more accelerators, each of which requires more HBM. The sold-out 2027 situation means that any company without existing hyperscaler relationships or its own supply contracts is effectively locked out of expanding AI compute capacity for at least 18 months. That's a structural advantage for incumbents that looks very durable.
The Databricks piece on managing AI coding costs at scale speaks directly to the demand side of this pressure. Their engineering blog detailed how internal AI coding tooling, models that write, review, and test code, can generate token burn rates that are genuinely shocking at scale. They're talking about hundreds of millions of tokens per day from coding assistants alone in a mid-sized engineering organization. The cost management techniques they describe, caching aggressively, routing requests to smaller models based on task complexity, batching-related requests, are becoming a new category of engineering specialization.
There's a macroeconomic point buried in this. The conventional wisdom was that AI would reduce software development costs through automation. What Databricks is actually describing is a world where AI increases the velocity of software production significantly, but the input costs, compute, memory, inference, scale, roughly in proportion to that velocity gain. The net cost reduction is smaller than predicted, and for some organizations, total spend has increased because they're producing software faster than they could before.
Which brings us to the story that generated the most comments on HN today by a significant margin, the Noema magazine piece titled, "Why is everyone in tech so sad?" with 799 comments at last check. The article explores what happens when an entire professional class loses confidence in the long-term viability of their careers. It's not about any single company's layoffs or any specific AI announcement. It's about a sustained erosion of the sense that being a software engineer is a stable, rewarding, and valued professional identity.
The economic pressure is real. Junior engineering positions have contracted significantly as wheeling, as AI coding tools reduce the need for entry-level code generation work. Mid-level engineers are finding their productivity is now judged against AI-augmented baselines. Senior engineers are increasingly being asked to manage AI systems rather than write software themselves, a role shift that many find alienating. And the career ladder that existed, junior to mid to senior to staff, is compressing in ways that make the traditional progression feel less certain.
But the HN comments reveal something beyond economics. There's a meaning dimension that pure job security doesn't capture. Many engineers chose this field because they found deep satisfaction in the craft, in understanding systems, in solving hard problems, in building things that work. When AI handles substantial portions of that craft, the remaining work can feel like management and error correction rather than creation. That's a psychological change that compensation alone doesn't address.
The U.S. Military Cyber Command suicide cluster story from Bloomberg is the darkest note in today's lineup and deserves more than a passing mention. Multiple deaths by suicide in a specialized cyber unit, close enough in time to constitute a cluster by epidemiological standards. Bloomberg's reporting links it to extreme operational stress, isolation, and the particular psychological burden of offensive cyber work, which involves thinking like an adversary, often in classified contexts with limited peer support. The mental health infrastructure for this population is apparently not matching the operational demands.
What connects these two stories, the tech morale piece and the military cyber unit, is the human cost of working in high-intensity technical environments where the goalposts are constantly moving, the stakes are opaque, and the support systems are inadequate. The scale and severity differ enormously, but the underlying dynamic of a workforce being asked to adapt faster than healthy adaptation is possible is present in both.
The Oregon curriculum corner moment here, because the "why is everyone in tech so sad" story brushes up against antitrust territory when readers start asking why a handful of companies control both the AI tools that are displacing engineers and the platforms those engineers work on. Understanding how antitrust law actually works is useful context. The Sherman Act, passed in 1890, prohibits monopolization and attempts to monopolize any part of interstate commerce. The critical thing to understand is that having a monopoly isn't illegal by itself. The law prohibits the abuse of monopoly power to exclude competition. Market share alone, even dominant market share, doesn't trigger liability. Courts look at how that share was obtained and maintained. If a company got to 80% of a market by genuinely building better products, that's not a Sherman Act violation. If they got there by locking competitors out through exclusive contracts, predatory pricing, or acquiring potential rivals before they could compete, that's where liability starts. The analogy I'd use: being the most popular restaurant in town isn't illegal. Bribing the city to deny building permits to any competitor is. When people argue that big tech's dominance of AI infrastructure should trigger antitrust scrutiny, the legal question isn't, are they big? It's, how did they get big, and what are they doing to stay big?
And that distinction matters enormously for where any remedies would go. Breaking up a company that achieved dominance through genuine innovation is a very different legal and political question than breaking up one that maintained dominance through anti-competitive conduct. The current DOJ and FTC cases against big tech are largely trying to establish which category applies.